Okay, guys, let's start. You can turn to 1 Chronicles chapter 11. 1 Chronicles 11 is where we're going to read. And let's see here. Antonio is going to read 1 Chronicles 11, 15 through 19. 1 Chronicles 11, 15 through 19. I'll read Joshua 1, 6. Let me see. Phil, can you read 1 Chronicles 11, verse 17 and 18? Colby, 1 Chronicles 11, 19. And that'll be all for now. 1 Chronicles 11, the chapter is on David's mighty men. These are leaders in the army. Actually, it would be a good study for you to do to look at their different men named. Some of them, it tells exactly what they did. That makes a good study on how to be a leader, how God can use you in greater measure, so you can do that in your own time. This is three of the men, and what it records is their loyalty to David. This is the story of David wanting a drink of water, and they break through enemy line to get him water, which is a picture of loyalty. In other words, they had a faithful allegiance to David. Loyalty is one of the issues that will determine your future. And I want to talk about the well of loyalty. 1 Chronicles 11, 15 through 19.
Now three of the 30 chief men went down to the rock to David, into the cave of Adullam and the army of the Philistines, and camped in the valley of Rephaim. David was then in the stronghold, and the garrison of the Philistines was then in Bethlehem. And David said with longing, "Oh, that someone would give me a drink of water from the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate." So the three broke through the camp of the Philistines, drew water from the well of Bethlehem that was by the gate, and took it and brought it to David. Nevertheless, David would not drink it, but poured it out to the Lord. And he said, "Far be it from me, O my God, that I should do this. Shall I drink the blood of these men who have put their lives in jeopardy? For at the risk of their lives they brought it." Therefore he would not drink it. These things were done by the three mighty men.
Okay, the well of loyalty. Let's talk about loyal men for a moment. There can be, sometimes there's unhealthy attitudes in men. And the first of those would be self-interest. This is how many people live their lives, is they approach everything, what's in it for me? And when they look at other people, they are thinking to themselves, what can I get out of you? And that is self-interest. So they wind up using people. They get upset with people when they don't give them what they want. They turn away when they feel that they don't have any use to them. Self-interest is something that hinders men. Then there's pride that breeds independence. And there, in some men, they hate anyone giving them direction. Don't tell me what to do. This story that we're reading, the chapter 11, or it's actually repeated in 2 Samuel 23, is the mighty men. And these were men that put themselves under David's leadership. And so independence is always destructive. That never ends well. And the third unhealthy attitude is minimum effort. There are some men, they live in life, what's the least amount that I have to do? That's how they work on the job. What's the least amount of work that I have to do without getting fired? Or in the kingdom of God, what's the least amount I have to do to still be a disciple and be used by God? In the New Testament, Jesus spoke, and you know the story, if someone asks you to carry something 1 mile, go 2. There was in the Roman occupation. They occupied the land of Israel. And so by law, a Roman soldier could point to any Jew and say, help me carry my equipment. That was the law. So what the Jews did is they erected mile markers. So the law said you had to carry by law Roman anything they asked you to carry for 1 mile. So they had these mile markers. I will carry it 1 mile and not one inch more. That was how they approached their occupation. But that's how some men approach everything in life. The job, the kingdom of God, I'm doing exactly what I need to do and not a thing more. But that's not the picture of these men, not any of the mighty men, but we're looking at these three. These men were connected to David as their leader. God's plan in life and salvation is leadership. God always has a man of God who will lead you into God's will. Joshua 1 verse 6.
Be strong and courageous, for you are the one who will lead these people to possess all the land I swore to their ancestors I would give them.
Okay, God plans good things for people. How do the people enter the good things? He said, a leader is going to lead you there. That is always God's plan. So these men that we're reading about, they made a choice to join themselves to a man of God. They believed in leadership. And you know, at the cave of Adullam, they went, and David was actually on the run. He wasn't appreciated by Saul. But they joined themselves to him. And they said, our lives are connected with you. So there was a heart. They weren't just in it. What can we get out of David? At that time, he didn't have anything. He's living in a cave. They weren't filled with pride, like, I don't need you or I'm better than you. They came to him, the Bible says, so that he could be their captain. And these men, what the story that we're reading here, it wasn't minimum effort. They had an attitude in life. Their attitude was, how can we be a blessing? In this case, it's how can we be a blessing to David? If you want God to use your life on any level, that needs to be the attitude of your heart. How can I be a blessing? That is how you should approach every human relationship. Not what can I get, what can you do for me, but how can I be a blessing? Verse 17 and 18 tells this.
And David said longingly, oh, that someone would give me water to drink from the well of Bethlehem that is by the gate. Then the three mighty men broke through the camp of the Philistines and drew water out of the well of Bethlehem that was by the gate, and took it and brought it to David, but David would not drink it. He poured it out to the Lord.
Okay, think about this story. David is from this area. David is simply reminiscing. He's talking about, you know, the good old days. Man, you know, it's dry and hot in this area. And he's thinking, man, when I was a boy living in Bethlehem, wow, the well water, it was so cool. It was so nice. Probably was, this is just reminiscing, maybe sitting around a fire. These three men, because they had a heart of how can we be a blessing, the problem was the enemy now controlled. The enemy, well, the guys who wanted to kill them were controlling Bethlehem. So they risked their lives to sneak through to get David a drink of water. That was extravagant. So this was the attitude of heart. How do you do that? In this case, you know, they were doing it for their leader. It's not washing his car, mowing his lawn, giving gifts. David said, your attitude was the gift. They bring him the water, and it's like he didn't drink it down and go, that was great, get me another. It's like the fact that you want to be a blessing, that is the gift. That's the greatest gift that you could give. You know what has to happen in life is you have to do more than just the minimum. What you need to do is catch your pastor's spirit. You know that what part of catching your pastor's spirit is, they were in tune with David's heart. what David loved, in this case, it's simple. David loved the water from Bethlehem. Then that is what they wanted to be a part of. Now, we're not talking about water today. What is it that is on your pastor's heart? That would be souls and world evangelism and the things that he wants to see in the church and in the world. You got to catch your pastor's spirit. And this is something that has to continue over time. Loyalty means faithfulness. Loyalty means you join to, and then you're faithful in joining. And so there cannot come a time when your loyalty is past tense. Yeah, I used to be loyal. I used to need direction, but now I know better. I'm successful, whatever. Joab was actually one of David's great men, but there came a point where he felt he knew more. His loyalty faded. So the first thing is loyal men. Let's talk secondly about a loyal leader. Now, we do understand that loyalty can be abused. And I have seen this through the years, is there can be men of God, unfortunately, they take the loyalty of people and they use people as a personal resource. That is destructive. They look at people. How can I get stuff from people? How can I get people to do things for me? And some of you have never experienced that. It is not good. It's not healthy. This is not how David viewed people. He didn't view loyalty from people as a commodity for his own self-interest. David felt that loyalty is something holy. In our text, they bring him this water. They think that David's going to go, oh, excellent, man, I remember the taste of this water. But when he realized they risked their life, they snuck down. They could have been killed getting him this water. The Bible says he would not drink it. Instead, he poured it out, which, you know, pouring out water, every sacrifice had what was called a drink offering. So what he's saying is, people that are loyal, that is something holy. He says, I'm not messing with that. I'm not using that for self-interest. So David's concern was not for himself. It was for his men, their safety. Literally, he was talking about their future. Verse 19.
God forbid that I should drink this, he exclaimed. This water is as precious as the blood of these men who risked their lives to bring it to me. So David did not drink it. These are the examples of the exploits of the three.
Okay, so this is something he now is before God is doing this. This is incredible that God would put loyal men into my sphere of influence. And that is something that is, he said, it's holy, like a drink offering. This is before God. This is between me and God. This is not just, thank God I have a bunch of men, meet at my house on Saturday. You can mow the lawn. You can clean the windows. You can paint. No. He said, this is incredible that men would even want to be a blessing. That is something that is holy. Now, I'm speaking, this would apply, of course, now to any pastor that's here. But some of you, you'll be a pastor someday. And you have to watch this. Is you can have people, they're grateful that their lives have been put back together. I've pastored people that they were on the brink of divorce, or they were dying, or their child was dying. They were facing prison. They are very appreciative of what I have done. And it would be easy to manipulate them for money or this or that. But thank God I had a very good example, as my father was not like that. He did not use people. And so, you know what? If you ever get to the point where you have men who want to be loyal to you, you need to understand that is an incredible privilege. To me, the greatest privilege is that I get to be a part of your destiny. It's not what can you do for me. You hear me, some of the guys at breakfast say that, you've heard me say, my understanding of discipleship and my responsibility, you are not here for me. I am here for you. That's what David is saying. I'm here for these men to lead them into their destiny. So as a man of God, you have to do what's right to help them enter their destiny. My father, for many years, in early days, he would define discipleship as the sincere desire to help another man enter his destiny. That, of course, is not the whole definition of what discipleship is, but that is a powerful attitude that must be there. You can never, someday, you can never make disciples if it's the other way around. If you're looking at people like, cool, this guy, man, my Christmas is going to be awesome because all these guys are going to give stuff to me. That's backwards. Is when you have a sincere desire, then it is. So you have to be, a man of God must have loyalty to the loyalty of his men. You got to be loyal to their loyalty. That's a profound issue. Final thought, the impact of loyalty. Whenever you find loyal leaders and loyal followers or disciples, what comes is the blessing of God. The Bible calls them mighty men. I think Antonio's translation called them chief men. They were mighty men. This was not a personal achievement, an award on a wall next to their participation certificate they got in the third grade. I don't know if you know that I'm a mighty man. I got it on the wall. I got a badge, mighty, big M, right on there. So think about what it meant to be a mighty man. They brought about the will of God in the nation of Israel. So what to be mighty means, your life becomes larger than you can be by yourself. That's the power of discipleship. Follow me and I'll make you fishers of men. What you want in life is you want your life to be bigger than you. You want life to be bigger than your golf handicap or your money in the bank or investments or whatever you have. They brought about the will of God in a nation. That's the blessing of God. That's what that makes you become mighty. They helped and blessed other people. They helped David achieve his destiny. That's a part of it. They saved people's lives. Each of the stories that you read in 2 Samuel 23 or 1 Chronicles 11, every time they fought the Philistines or the giant Egyptian or the lion in a pit on a snowy day, that was for other people. You change people's lives. At the end of the day, what you want, at the end of your life, you want to say, I was able to make impact for good on people's lives, whether that's saved from hell, delivered from drugs, helping their marriage. You want your life to bless other people. And finally, they inspired other people. Mighty men. These are the men that other soldiers looked up to. They wanted to be like them. They inspired other men to believe that they can win in battle because they saw this guy fight and he won. There's something powerful about being an example, about inspiring people. That's why I love to inspire men. I spend a great deal of my time answering questions, helping pastors with preaching, because I want to inspire them. You can preach better than you are right now. You can preach well. You can impact people through the Word of God. I want to inspire them to do that. And thousands of years later, these men, they've been dead for, 3,000 years, 4,000 years? They're still inspiring people today. We're still talking about them. Because their life lives on. That only comes by loyalty. I can tell you about hundreds and thousands of men through the years that have been disloyal. That's why I laugh sometimes at breakfast. Someone will bring up a name from the past and there'll be a chorus around the table of who? Disloyal men are forgotten. Disloyal men. No one remembers their name. We move on without them. So that's a choice, and our choice is we can be loyal men. Loyalty is a powerful principle. Okay, let's open for questions. Something you want to ask about this subject or broader than this subject.
Pastor, how can you be a blessing while at the same time identifying and protecting yourself from being taken advantage of, if, like, especially in ministry, obviously, if you see that, like, if people are, how do you identify that?
So, but clarify the first part. You protect yourself against what? You're talking about now a pastor protecting himself?
Well, either a pastor, you want to be a blessing to your pastor or another disciple, and you recognize, how do you recognize you're being taken advantage of, and how do you protect yourself against that?
Well, okay, as a disciple, I had a pastor that took advantage of us, but I don't regret it. You know, I still want to be a blessing. His idea of a blessing was come vacuum my car and wash my car and whatever. So that's on him. He's long gone off the scene, but I still had a good attitude. I didn't get a funky attitude like, that's not in my contract. The discipleship contract says nothing about vacuuming. I just want to be a blessing. So it doesn't matter. Now, obviously, if there's, literal, something illegal, immoral, can be taken to an extreme, but I'm not trying to protect myself. Like, why are you really asking that? I just want to be a blessing. The reverse, you protect yourself. Like I say, I am protective against using people. Someone made a comment recently and said, you're a hard man to bless because I'm not comfortable with people doing stuff, working on my house, doing stuff for free. I pay them. And part of that is things I've experienced that were negative in the reverse. So I would rather be like that and bless people rather than use people. So I'm protecting myself. Then, of course, you can in life, you can have, you're trying to help people. As I said, you're a leader. You want to be a blessing. You have to learn in life. There are users in life. Right, you get people that they're just simple, they're mooches. That's their whole manner of life. Those are the people I stop helping. Nah, I'm not into that because it's not actually doing a greater good. Is they'll suck everybody dry till the day they die. But that's something you learn over time. You got to learn how to get good at that.
Pastor, how do you catch your pastor's heart? What are some of the ways?
You ask for it. It would be one thing. You ask God to help you have that. Secondly, you pay attention. You pay attention. What is it? If you listen, you find out what's important to him. Right? That's the thing. Or you ask what is important, and you find out. And so, but that's a supernatural dimension. And then there is a part of, there is a healthy part of emulation. In other words, you don't have to have my accent, my hairline, but you, I wanted to be like my pastor. I wanted to be like him in good ways. And I made a deliberate effort. And I compared, like, am I? That's not how I would, that isn't that what the disciples did? Hey, outreach didn't go good. Should we cut on fire and kill everybody? Like, Jesus, you don't have any idea. Hey, pastor doesn't do that. Maybe I shouldn't have that attitude, right? You compare over time. But you'll never have your pastor's spirit if you're filled with pride. If it's like, I got to be my own man and, be protecting your ego.
In a pioneer setting, what's the balance of being a blessing to converts and being taken advantage of, such as like giving rides?
Well, first rule of thumb is money. You have no right to give away money that doesn't belong to you. So we have guys, we're paying their support, and then we see on their sheet they're giving people money. That's wrong. That's immoral. You have no right to do that. And if it's a matter of giving their money, their burden gets much lower, right? So that's first of all. The rule of thumb, I talked about mooches and takers. So there's several basic rules of thumb when you're pioneering and you're working out who to help. Number one is people who ask easily or expect, don't do it. Okay? So if people had no problem coming and asking me for money in South Africa, and you got to imagine in South Africa, back at one point it was 14 to 1. To me, it's bottle caps. It's like, this is insignificant money, but it's not healthy. They're like, yeah, Pastor, you need to give me 3,000 rand. If they asked easily, nope, can't do it. But there were people that were desperate, then I would consider it. That's one rule of thumb. In pioneering, it's very simple. Is anything, it's easy to start something, it's really hard to stop. So rides, people, I have never met an addict who said, I don't do drugs anymore, you know why? Because I can't get a ride to see my dealer. They always find a way, right? I don't party anymore because, man, you got to find a ride. Huh? I have no idea how to get there, right? So the bottom line is people can do what they want. So it's not healthy to get trapped into. And this is a conversation I have with many, many pioneers, is they're trapped. They start giving people rides, and now they're stuck. How do you stop? So then, man, the church isn't growing. How many seats are available in your car? Two. Okay, that's as big as your church will ever get. You're stuck. That's not good. So that's not a healthy way to live. So you got to. That doesn't mean you never give someone a ride, but it's not healthy. If their salvation is depending on you bringing them, then they're probably not. They're not really going to stay saved very long. Somebody else. Yep.
How do you inspire somebody who doesn't want to change?
A miracle. That's all. Only God can make people change. So that's the basis of my life is trusting God to change them. So you can't. I mean, I try to live it. I try to live what I want people to be. You know, as I ask you to give because I'm a giver. You know, you should be generous. I'm generous. I know that. I have no problem asking you to do what I do. Prayer and, you know, many different things. But at the end of the day, people will change when they want to, and God has to do that. So you got to trust God. I set the example. If there's ever a conversation, I can tell them if the conversation opens. But you can't make people change. And I've tried it. I've tried headlocks. I've tried guilt. I've tried many different ways. Only God can change people. Flesh and blood didn't reveal this to you, Peter. Only my Father in heaven. That's what has to happen. You got to pray for it. Somebody else. Yep.
So, in that story with the mighty man, is there an element to communicating how the loyalty is played out? You know, because like they kind of just went and did something without telling David, like, hey, we're going to go do this. Is there like an element? I know every kind of a picture of the loyalty and like other details. Like,
sure.
Be like exactly how it should be, but what is that element of communication of like showing the loyalty within?
Well, I think the simple lesson there would be, never mind the water, the simple lesson was initiative. Hey, let's do something. So that, you know, let's go back to loyalty. Ayel asked about finding your pastor's heart. So these questions, you can put them together. So what is it that is important to your pastor rather than, you know, some fine Christmas gift? Get somebody saved. That would be powerful, right? The young people went and did their own outreach the other day or the other night and had 13 people saved. That's a fantastic Christmas gift right there. That shows initiative. That also shows that they're in line with what the pastors love as well, right? So that's in many ways that's my point. If you've ever had it backwards, if you ever had a pastor who used you for personal gain, then it's hard for you to grasp. But instead, to have someone who loves that you are showing initiative and that you are entering your destiny, that's the greatest gift you can ever give a pastor. Initiative is that. That'd be the lesson that you take from that, which means doing it without being told. He wasn't telling them to go. They wanted to. They came up with the idea. Somebody else. Thinking. Yes?
So in a case to where you're taking over a church and the church has loyalty to the person you're taking over for, how do you win their loyalty?
Rehoboam, love them and serve them and they'll be your servants. But he wouldn't do that. In pride, he tried to demand it. So loyalty cannot be demanded. You can never demand that anybody be loyal to you. So all you can do is be loyal and serve them, and that will come. So taking over from someone who's done well before you, rule number one, say nice things about them. There are people there who liked him. You say good things about him, they give you extra credit. Like, I like the previous guy. You like the previous guy? Hey, then I like you too. That's rule number one. Don't diss him. Don't say anything bad about him. But then you serve. All you got to do is love and serve. There are people in Prescott when I came that never talked to me for ages. But then their child got sick. I was there in the hospital with them. And they, all of a sudden, I was the greatest thing since sliced bread. What changed? I was the same guy. I served them. And that you. And then thirdly, you get wins. They're not really sure whether you're any good, but you know, I've taken over churches that were stagnant, then people are getting saved, good things are happening. Or you take a church that is doing well, and over time, you know, that's what, you know, in Prescott, there were people that were, and in the fellowship, they were nervous when my father died, right? What's going to happen now? But then what gives them confidence is when we stay in the same vein, we're not changing. So,
where do you believe these men, these mighty men, learned or captured this spirit of loyalty from? Was it just from observing David, or is there other ways to, you know, impart and teach and show this element?
Well, I'm sure in large part it's their they saw and learned it from David, but really it's a heart issue, right? If you're a loyal man, you're a loyal man. If you're a loyal man, you can be trusted with money, you can be trusted with women, you can be trusted with ministry, you're just a trustworthy man. And so if you're not a loyal man, you won't be loyal anywhere else. So I think that's a heart issue. They were good men in there. Obviously the Bible just gives you snippets, so we don't know much about them. I couldn't really tell you about their prayer life and anything else, but that's the point. These men are mighty, but that's a heart issue that makes you mighty. But then they saw a living example of loyalty, right?
Yeah.
Is David came on the scene, no one will fight the giant. Saul, I'll fight the giant for you, right? And then Saul's trying to kill him, and he still was being loyal. He's jealous of him, envious, and he's still trying to serve Saul. So they saw it in him. That's the thing. But you can see the best example. Some of the worst men in our fellowship came from Prescott. So they saw the best example, but they didn't have it. So that's your choice.
How can you examine your own loyalty, like to see if you're really as loyal as you should be, or not deceive yourself? Is there a way? Is it just prayer and asking God to reveal it?
Yeah, I think so. I think at the end of the day, if you ask God to show me my heart, that's a biblical prayer, right? Psalm 139, reveal if there be any wicked way in me. That's an honesty factor, asking God to give me my pastor's spirit. And then there are points of comparison. Like I use the example of people irritate me on outreach. I want them all to die versus Jesus. Apparently I'm not like him. So there are ways of comparison. But those are things that I don't think you obsess over. If you just determine to do right, if you want to be a blessing and you do right over time, you're changing without you realizing it. That's what I've experienced, Phil.
Okay.
In many different situations, I didn't, you know, I think I told in memorial stones when my father told me his plan to take over, I didn't believe that, but Lisa and I said, my parents are getting old, they need help, we will serve them, and we'll leave the future to God. I didn't really think it would happen, but I just came, how can I be a blessing? I want to bless my pastor, I want to bless my parents, and left it. I wasn't like, am I more loyal today? Am I a better man today? You just serve, find opportunities, work over time, and then you kind of, life, sometimes you look back and go, oh, I've made changes I was not aware of, because it happens day by day. Yep. Now, somebody
that,
else.
Is that something that happens also, like when, as a disciple, you have a pastor change? Does that happen? Does it happen the same way where you just continue to do the things that you know are right, and it just naturally,
sure,
your loyalty transfers over?
Yeah. Yes. So there's a, you know, there's an element of, there's two sides of that, is you have to make a deliberate effort to continue in loyalty, right? There are men like, I was loyal to the last guy, but I'm not going to be loyal to this guy. That's not healthy. So you say, God makes a choice. I'm going to stay loyal. So that is a part of it. And then you have, like I say, I've had pastoral changes where the new guy wasn't good in ways, but it didn't give me the right to dismiss God's plan of leadership because this guy has some flaws. So I am going to keep doing right regardless. And then you kind of leave the future with God. God sorts them out. God, you know, there's a lot of factors involved. But you have to make a deliberate choice. I got to choose. God, whenever God makes a choice, my job is to go along with his choice, not to make my own choices.
Continuing on that thought, as a pastor, is there a way to prepare your congregation to not be so attached to you, but in a sense, the kingdom of God? So,
well, I think in the first place, it depends on how you structure the church over time. We structure our church that you need to get a hold of God for yourself. We are not God for you. And so we don't have a burning need to run your life. So if you're pointing people to Jesus, that's the most healthy way. So then when you move on, if God calls you to move on, you point them, trust, keep in touch with Jesus. That's number one. Then number two is my wife and I, we have loved people all over the world, but when we leave a church, we leave a church. Because I'm not calling back in, and I will never receive complaints from them. Like, I don't like this new guy. You better not tell me that. Nonsense. You got a new pastor, you're going to sort out with him. So I help them in that way. So that doesn't mean that we never say, you know, how dare you say Merry Christmas to me or send me a card. But there are guys that they're constantly, because I love these people, so they're reaching back. They actually, the new people never get a chance to bond with or the people never get a chance to bond with the new guy, because the old guy is still, my wife and I have never operated like that, because David served his generation. I figure every place I've gone, I served for my time. And now that I'm done, I want your loyalty to be transferred to the new guy. You got fond memories of me. If I was a good example, you know, people we pastored talk about the blessing that we were. That's good. But I'm not their pastor now. So I help them in that way. So that's very healthy for them. Yep.
When you are being a blessing, how do you balance that without wearing yourself out?
Common sense. Yeah, you gotta use common sense. So you have to, in life, you have to learn your own rhythms of time management and rest and healthy relationships. So yeah, you know, there are guys that they talk about how exhausted they are and how their marriage is doing bad and blah, blah, blah. You know, my wife wants to kill me when I go out and be involved in ministry. How many ministries are you involved in church? 17. Okay, that's not going to work. Just do the math, right? How many free nights do we have a week? You're overcommitted. You need to pick one. Do that, and, you know. So we try to provide some common sense. And so, but then, as in many questions, guys who don't sort out rejection issues can't say no. That's Pastor Jesse's series. He talked about that. You can't say no. You feel obligated. Everybody who asks you yes, the answer is yes. That'll get you in trouble. So you gotta have a good sense of who you are. I have no problem saying no as well. So that would be overcommitted, right? And so you have to. That's a way you sort that out, so you don't get into that position. Yep. Sorry, David.
When you you're a leader and you can tell with somebody who's helping you or working with you that they have a level of loyalty that might be maybe a little unhealthy. It just feels like it could go too far. How do you kind of keep that balance with that person?
Well, in one sense, if you're not using them, it often will take care of itself. If you encourage that, if you if in any way you like that and take advantage of that, it will fuel it. So in one sense, if you're just not like that, it will help. But then there are people you challenge them. You need a relationship with Jesus. I'm not Jesus, right? So you want what's best for people. So you try to push them in ways that are best for them as well, right? So that's, yeah. So that's how you operate in life. Somebody else? Anything else you want to ask? See or no? Okay, we'll stop there. Thank you, gentlemen.